C7. Number 21B.
So, when Mr. Zedi refers to Jehovah, really in that lower sense, as a finite deity, as a national deity, she naturally refers to the term Jehovah as given in the Jehovistic document. But this verse here from Exodus 6:3 is not from the Jehovistic document. It is from the priestly document. And the priestly document usually uses Elohim as a name for God. But here, it is used in the priestly document as Jehovah. It is used in Exodus 6:3 and actually in the connotation of what has just gone before, namely just before it was stated that Moses saw the new name of God, which would indicate that it would give a higher sense of a God than Abraham, Isaac and Jacob had. Namely, it was there where right before the name of God was revealed as the I am that I am. The I am that I am. And even that I am that I am has been inserted by an additional editor. It is neither in the Jehovistic document, nor in the Elohistic document, nor in the priestly document, but is actually inserted by another editor. They call it usually R, when they don't know which editor it is, that's the summary of the R document, and is an indication. So the priestly document refers back to this rather unknown editor who could see the new name of Jehovah as the I am that I am. And in this way it makes sense that the priestly document referred back not to the priestly document, but referred back to another document which wanted to show that I am that I am, but that term has never been properly been interpreted, because nobody knew how to interpret it. Why? Because the Hebrew language has no future tense. And as it has no future tense, they never know if they had written something, if it means the present tense or the future tense. Therefore, they didn't quite know if they should translate it that the name that has been revealed is the I am that I am, or if they should really translate it, I am he who always shows himself as the I am. Which would be a future tense in it, a tense in it which would show something terrific, which would really pinpoint Genesis here, which would say that I am, and every day that I'm going to show a new day of creation, I am a new I am. I'm always that which I'm going to present myself to you as the I am. Whatever happens will always be the I am that will happen. There's nothing else going on in being but that God generates himself, that God gives birth to himself constantly, so that Genesis, so to say, is a God Genesis and not so much a God who creates something outside of himself, who creates a universe. Because that has been the subject really of the chapter creation, showing that God is the creator and has created an universe of ideas. What is the difference between the chapter on creation and the chapter on Genesis? Is creation, Genesis, more or less the same? What is the difference between them? And here in Genesis, we find the generating power of the I Am that generates himself constantly as what he is, but generates himself. So that actually, I think we come to the point where we begin to see that we should lose a concept of God that is static. A concept of God that says, I am what I am, finito, finished, period, nothing more, static, to a sense of infinite dynamics that says, I am what? I am that which I am always going to be again, and over all again, and over again. And I am the I am that never repeats itself. That is my I am-ness. I am generating myself. And that can be wonderfully seen in the 7 days of creation. That the I am God says always, let there be. If he would be static, he could only say once, let there be, and everything would be finished. But he said, let there be, and this is one stage, and now let's go to the second stage, let there be, and God said, let there be, again a creation. You see? A second stage. So, indicating that God generates himself and says, all right, I present myself first or reveal myself first as mind. Then I am going to reveal myself as spirit. Then I am going to reveal myself as soul. And then as principle, and then as life, and then as truth, and then as love. This would be a generation. God's own generating power of himself. Not so much, you see, God bringing about the a creation, which would have been the ninth chapter. It's worthwhile thinking about it, because that would be an explanation for a statement that Mrs. Eddy makes in this first record of creation, which is, from the classical logical standpoint, a paradox. Namely, when she says there in towards the end of the first record of creation, that she said about the spiritual creation was the outgrowth, the emanation. Well, that sounds like a creation, an emanation, an outgrowth, growing out from a source, from a cause, growing out of it. And then correcting it at once and says, of his infinite self-containment. This is a paradox. Either you grow out of something or you are contained in something. But spiritually, naturally, this is not a paradox. Here we come really to that that very interesting point that the mystics have always seen, that you can explain something in the best way through paradoxes. The only thing they don't really see is the dimensional sense in those statements. But actually, this is a paradox. Like the mystics would present something, that something can be the outgrowth and yet not be the outgrowth, and yet be the self-containment. And this is so beautiful, because it just knocks over and kills our false concept which we have gained from the classical reasoning, that a cause is always a cause and that the effect is always outside the cause. Somewhere else, sometime else, it's separated by time and space, cause and effect, and actually this is not possible in the oneness of being. In the oneness of being, we cannot have that separation of cause and effect. And yet, we do not want to have an amorphous whole, an amorphous self-containment. We want to see the infinite individuality within that self-containment. But in order that that infinite individuality within that self-containment is not static, it must have a creative ability within itself. It must have a changing ability within itself. And so we come to a completely different sense of creation. Mrs. Eddy says, isn't this grace much more a revelation? This is already quite a great step forward, and says, actually what seems to be a creation is nothing else than a revelation. At the moment we have revelation, we just take away the sense that this has to do with a different place and different time. It frees, it's already freed from time and space. But then you can say, now what is revelation? What is now creation when seen as revelation? Is it revelation just one indefinite, terrific light? Or is that revelation structured? And then suddenly we come to an absolutely new sense of creation and revelation, namely to a sense of constant restructuring. And if we see that creation is a constant restructuring of the same elements that have ever been there, of the same building blocks that have ever been there, then we can understand that it is an emanation or a creation of an infinite self-containment. That these terms do not exclude each other, and it gives the terrific sense that you start out from perfection. You have the whole infinite self-containment, you have everything right at the start, and though you have everything right at the start, you still can have a creation, namely by restructuring the parts of the whole. That gives new structures. That isn't that a revelation? Isn't that a creation? So, if we would see that, we would really see, therefore, that what happens in that thing called God is that God constantly restructures himself. That would be the God Genesis. Yeah? I don't know now, did I make an illustration last week about this, about taking 700 little pieces of stones? Or did I do that on the West Coast? All right. No? Didn't I talk about it? Yes. Some say yes, some say no. Perhaps I have talked about it. Not last week. You see, it's like this. I always try to figure out, to find an illustration. It's always like this. Say, if we take 100 little stones blue and 100 stones green and 100 stones red, and of all the seven fundamental colors, 100 stones, then you have 700 stones. Let's say this is all what we have. This is the self-containment. We have everything in it. 100 times 7. Now, let's say this is now the sum total of deity, that's God. Now, we don't take away a single stone, nor do we add from now on a single stone. And yet, we can arrange them every time differently, and the possibility of arranging them is practically infinite. Practically infinite. And if you take 1,000 red and 1,000 blue and restructure them, it's infinite. The moment you have that kind of combination. We know that already if we take 7 and put them into different order, we already can put 7 items into 5,040 different orders. Already with 7. Now what about 700? What about 7,000? What about all the ideas of mind, all the ideas of spirit, of soul, of principle, of life, truth and love? This is infinitude. So we do not add anything, we do not take away anything. Can you see? The datas, the facts are defined, are given, but what makes creation is only relationship, not the pieces. The moment I put a new relationship into it, I have a new picture. It's not the datas that are important. not the stones that are so important. Naturally, I need them. But what makes creation is relationship. Relationship creates. Just as we have seen with the drop of water and the ocean, relationship creates new qualities. And so here, in Genesis, we have that. We have that one God that always declares himself and always says from anew. He doesn't say, I am what I am. He says, I am mind. I express myself as mind, as spirit, as soul, as principle, as life, as truth, as love. I am spirit. I express that spirit as mind, as spirit, as soul, as principle, as life, as truth and love. I'm soul, I express myself, and you can go on. You can go on through the 7-7. Then you can put in, I'm mind, I express myself as the word of mind, as the Christ of mind, as the Christianity of mind, as the science of mind. And you can go on and say, I'm mind, I express myself as the mind of spirit in the world, as the mind of spirit in the Christ. There is no end to it. There's no end to it. You really get into what? Into the divine, infinite calculus. Do you understand what Mrs. Eddy now says at the end of the 7 days? That these 7 days are numerals of infinity. They are not just seven appearings. They are numerals of infinity. They have always eternal values. And thought accepts the divine, infinite calculus. Do you see that now? How? That's the God Genesis that always rearranges himself, so to say. He says, I'm not just mind, bang. Next to somewhere in another compartment, I'm spirit, bang. He says, through the synonymy principle, all these seven blend with each other. They are always in a different order, in a different blending. I'm at the same time Word and Christ and Christianity and science. So I blend the 7-7 with the 4-4. But I'm also divine science, absolute Christian science and Christian science, because it said, let there be light. And that light came down. There was no more darkness. So you can see fundamentally you take into it another dimension of the levels of science and thought. Must accept the divine infinite calculus. God is no more just a sovereign up there who said, once, some times ago, how do the little story start? Once upon a time I made the whole thing and that was the end of it. Finito. Finished. Period. No more. He's the eternal generator of himself. That's Genesis. God generating himself constantly. So we lose that mystical sense of a God somewhere as a center that creates man somewhere in the circumference and puts him somewhere into a universe, no matter if that man is a mortal or if it's considered as an idea. This thing is still a mystical concept. There is just one thing going on in Genesis, that God always generates himself as himself. And every time he generates himself as himself, it's another structure. And therefore, it's always new. It's a creation going on. Yeah? Do you feel what will happen to us? If with the syllabus classes we get a cultured sense of mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love and contemplate mind and spirit and see that mind is amness, I amness, the only I amness, there is I amness. It's not the mind that is God separate from our mind, it's just mind. We are not even asking anymore, is that mind God or is it my mind? It's just mind, you know, it's just mind. And we lose that sense of God and man. And can you see what happens with us if we contemplate just this synonymous term as mind and as spirit and as soul and then afterwards along the line of the Word and along the line of the Christ and Christianity and science and thought accept the divine infinite calculus. Can you see? We feel that we are in the God Genesis. God generating himself constantly. We are no more going to ask about anything about men and the universe and about our problems and about our body and things like that. It's all included. It's all included. Yeah? You feel where I want to lead you. But you must come along, you know? I'm no more 20-year-old. I'm no more 30, you know? I'm getting now an old guy, you know? Huh? So, I've tried 40 years now, see? Now this is a chance. I would say the last chance to get along with me. Because I can't start all over that again the next year or the year after. I don't want anymore. So come along with me. Come along. Try it. It's an adventure. Okay, it's an adventure. You don't know where, what is the outcome. But you have one thing that is certain, that you go along the fundamentals of being. I don't teach you anything out of myself. I only teach what is in the textbook. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Always the same, over and over and over. And each time it's new, it's new, it's new, it's new. And the more we contemplate it and contemplate it, it has a seed within itself. It has the seed within itself. It begins to sprout within each one. And that's always something new comes up now in each one. It's individualized now, infinitely individualized. Everyone sees something else in it. And so they become infinitely individualized. Golly, what the universe. That's God Genesis. All right, now let's see what we can put in here in Genesis. Well, I think what we can put here is, you see, that the infinite includes its creation. Huh? Perhaps that creator including creation. Creator including creation. The self-containment including the creative ability. That's the oneness. That there is not a creator and an emanation and out there somewhere a creation. But that there is only one creator and within that creator is a creation. The creation is within the creator and not without. No, you must say outside the creator. It's within the creator. So creator including creation. Naturally the dualistic sense here is that the creator and the creation are separate. The law that we could state here, I think, would be very simple again. We just would see that, I think we could state it like this, that God generates himself within himself. It's so simple that it's so deep that one has to be very quiet for oneself in order to ponder it. That mind generates mind. Mind can't generate something else but itself, its own nature, you see. So mind generates constantly mind within mind. It has the seed within itself, within mind. Not somewhere without, not somewhere in the brain of a mortal, somewhere in the thinking of a mortal, but always within mind. And so you can go right through with spirit, that spirit generates, spirit only, within spirit, and so right through to love. You can make those ditto signs for yourself. But you know, there is actually much more in it. I don't have the time to go into it, but naturally you can ask yourself, This would be on the level of divine science, but divine science includes or reflects absolute Christian science and Christian science. And therefore we can ask, well, how on earth does mind generate mind? What makes mind generating mind? And there you would see, oh golly, I can take in the generating principle, namely life, truth and love, and begin to see, golly, what happens is really that I can see it is in the nature of the impulsion of life and the factuality of truth and the fulfilled sense of love that it generates mind. And I begin to see that life, truth and love generate mind. I begin to see that life, truth and love generate spirit. That life, truth and love generate soul. And that life, truth and love generate principle. And life, and truth and love. And if you know the chart, you see that I have taken in right away the whole vertical of the word. But not in a translating sense, because in the oneness of being you don't translate down to the point of the opposite, but to see that at the point of divine science, you can also see that divine science itself reflects life, truth and love in absolute Christian science, and that it reflects the whole word order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, without that it needs to show how the opposite is being resolved. I ask you, if you have a problem, try out this law. Try out this law as a practitioner and see, my golly, who is the practitioner? Am I the practitioner? Do I have to be aware that mind generates mind? Or is life, truth and love aware that it wants to generate mind out of mind? That life, truth and love generates spirit out of itself? That life, truth and love now generates soul out of itself? It's quite terrific. You feel we have nothing to do with the whole thing. But within the genesis of being, nothing is going on, but really that wonderful law of life, truth and love generating itself. And in this way reflecting itself as the coming on of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love, and fulfilling its mission. That would be the higher sense of this chapter. Yeah?